Unified Review Theory.
Hello!
Hello!
Welcome to a very special edition of the Unified Review Theory podcast.
Yeah, the podcast in which we review everything in the world, one at a time. It takes a while, but we're getting there. And we give it all marks out of 10 to judge what is best.
I think I worked out we're about 12.5% through everything in the world so far.
That's not bad.
So, no, it's, you know, we're getting there. We're getting there.
And we've only been at it for, like, you know, 4 or 5 years or...
Longer than we care to mention.
On and off is, I think, a key phrase here.
Yes.
In case our listeners are confused by me saying we've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. What?
Or wonder why we've achieved so little in that.
Or why we bother at all.
Or why we
No.
This is why we bother.
Yeah, exactly. This is why we bother. It's a duty. Do you think we're doing this for fun? You think this is enjoyable?
I don't have better things to do with my time.
Yes, anyway, I'm Neil.
I'm James.
And, yeah, together we're going to talk about some stuff and then give it marks out of 10. That's the format.
But why is this a special podcast, Neil?
Well, it's not really that special. Oh, no, it is. You're right, yes. Well, the reason that I thought we'd do this podcast is that I've recently been using our podcast as an amazing magical tool to get my 2-year-old son to go to sleep at night, because he was having trouble going to sleep. He'd just cry and cry for hours. It was very stressful and, you know, unpleasant. And then we started, like, playing the podcast to him, and he'd just sort of lie there and listen to it and nod off. It was literally quite amazing to witness the overnight change. Then he started waking up in the night, and that was annoying as well, so I just left it playing on a loop all night. So my son and his developing infant mind are listening to you and me discuss Voltron and Quantum Leap and other such fascinating and important topics for any toddler for, you know, 8 hours a night. And so as he, that makes him easily, I think, you know, by a degree of about 1,000%, our most dedicated listener in the world.
And it also implies that if you're having trouble sleeping, then, you know, just listen to us drone on and on and on and on.
And on and on. So, yeah, so that inspired the theme for tonight's very special episode of Unified Review Theory, where we're going to be looking at the subject of sleep and various topics associated with that. And we're going to be giving them marks out of 10, but doing so in a laid-back, relaxing, sleep-inducing way, without any sudden noises!
Or swearing, I guess, if you're paying this to your son.
He's only 2, he doesn't know what it fucking means.
We'll see, we'll see.
Well, okay.
When he goes to nursery and starts calling all the other toddlers cunts, you'll know who to blame.
I'll blame the other toddlers, they're all saying it already. You've seen the area where you live
in. Blame the other toddlers for acting like cunts.
If they didn't act like a cunt, he wouldn't have to call them a cunt, James.
So with those sweary things, I was going to say, because last time we got slapped with an explicit rating by iTunes, I don't think we're going to fare any better this time.
I think we've been quite explicit enough already, so we'll try and keep it clean from here on in. I guess I could always beep stuff in the edit, but...
Can you be asked?
Oh, God, no. Oh, fuck no.
Beep. I'll tell you what, if we think the other one's going to swear, we'll just say beep.
Okay, that could be confusing, but it'll be a fun little added mental challenge.
Beep!
Cunt.
I thought you were going to swear there.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we've got a bit off topic.
We've got a little bit off topic, so we'll get back to it, onto the ongoing mission of reviewing things, and go straight to our first review subject tonight, which is the thing that gets you to sleep, in theory, of an evening.
If you are two years old.
Which is the CBeebies bedtime hour. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the CBeebies bedtime hour, James?
Yes, well, I thought what I'd do is chart the general trend of parenting and television, is how it seems to have worked for most people I know who are parents. You start off thinking, oh, I'm not going to use the television, I won't have them watching TV, it's rubbish stuff. Then he's just really bugging you, and you just want to get away with him half an hour. So you turn it on a bit, and then feel guilty afterwards, and then you just end up using it more and more and more. feeling worse and worse and buying DVDs, and you know, your habit gets out of control. But that is what the beauty of the CBeebies bedtime hour is, because one of the most important things for children is routine.
Absolutely.
So if
yeah.
that routine involves sticking them in front of the TV for an hour while you just go and start on the beer or whatever, then you know, it's everyone's a winner.
Yes, it is, absolutely. I mean, it's. I think it's probably, the CBeebies bedtime hour is probably a fixed part of the nighttime routine of, it must be a huge, huge proportion of, you know, parents of young children in this country. Well, people with multi-channel television, I guess, because it's...
Who doesn't have multi-channel television? Losers,
actually. Losers with kids who are screaming and not going to sleep at night. The losers.
Well, that serves them right.
Yeah. I keep having to force myself not to say the C word now, because you've put it in my head, so I keep wanting to interject it in amusing ways, and I'm going to not do that.
Well, just use the word cabbage instead.
That's lame.
You fucking cabbage.
But yeah, no, I think because you are sort of about 6 months ahead of us on the curve of these things generally...
In that we gave in a lot.
No, just you know, developmentally and stuff. Your child is a bit ahead of ours, and so we sort of get to see what's coming, you know, coming down the line. And I do remember when you were first extolling the virtues of CBeebies as a tool for child pacification. I was thinking, I mean, really, having to use a telly, you know. I wouldn't make my kid watch telly for hours, and that's terrible. I'm never going to say anything, but I think James is probably a pretty terrible parent.
You did say it though, several times.
Oh, did I? Yeah, okay. And I was probably acting quite smug about how we didn't do that and we didn't need to resort to such things. And then a few months later, and he stood in front of it like he's trying to climb into the fucking night garden.
Which you would if you could, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we haven't really discussed any of this, given any description of people who don't have 2-year-olds and don't watch these fucking programmes every night for an entire
hour. Oh, you're missing out.
Do you want to give a little bit
so,
of background?
The current lineup of the... Because it changes every few months, which is actually one of the most traumatic periods in a parent's life.
It turns with the
and
seasons,
go, oh my God,
doesn't it?
Where's Third and Bird at? But currently it is Way Blue, followed by In the Night Garden, followed by The Bedtime Story, which I think that's a good enough thing for us. We'll leave the past behind. We'll leave Chris and Poi behind, because I don't think you ever experienced Chris and Poi, but that was the golden years of the...
Oh, really?
The bedtime hour.
I've seen them. They're on at like lunchtime now.
She's
one
you know,
of the two women on CBeebies that I have to work. You have to work really hard watching CBeebies to find women on telly to fancy. And Poi off Chris and Poi is one of them, I think.
Not Upsy Daisy.
I don't think I could work that hard that I could get myself mentally to a place where I find Upsy Daisy attractive.
Yeah,
but maybe I'm just
not
trying hard enough.
But Poi was actually she was Po from the Teletubbies as well.
Oh, really?
And which was the sexiest of the Teletubbies? I think I agree.
Hell yeah, that takes no effort at all.
But yes, anyway, Chris and Poi are gone. We've now got blonde one-armed woman and crazy gurning Alex man, who I can't stand. They do the Lynx.
Yes.
And I mean, you have to wonder how much budget they have for the presenting on CBeebies, because it seems to be the same thing every day, and they have one set.
James, it's introducing the same programmes every day to an audience
That's
of
true.
2-year-olds. What? How much is there they can possibly say? I think they do pretty well, considering, you know.
Well, I'm still hoping for some kind of broadcast news-style meltdown, where, you know, Alex just starts... stabbing a picture of Iggle Piggle with an ice pick.
Oh, I wouldn't blame him, man.
Crying to himself.
He must hate Iggle Piggle with a passion.
Oh, Iggle Piggle. So if we... they're basically, it's three programmes with a bit of light-hearted bedtime-style banter in between. So if we just start with Way Blue, maybe. I think the trend seems to be they're all quite relaxing. So it's kind of...
That's
the
idea. It's kind
of
winding down time, isn't it?
So, Way Blue, to sum it up, I cannot sum it up because it is just beyond mental. but to attempt it, it's four floating yoga new age hippie monkey
flying
things.
Yoga hippie monkeys. I hate them.
Who just float around giggling in some big green pastoral idyll with lots of kids running around pretending not to be really bored because the things they're acting with don't
exist.
And
because they're not actors, not pretending that well and looking a bit confused and, yeah, quite bored.
It's the only way I can get enjoyment from it, is actually spotting the bored, staring off into the middle distance one who's supposed to be engaging with flying monkey yoga.
It's a very strict format, this programme. The four flying yoga monkeys have a little chat. You know, one of them wants to do a poo, but the poo's coming out really hard or something. They have a problem that day, and then they get interrupted by, it's time to do a bit of yoga. So they do a bit of yoga, and then the kids turn up, and they play hide-and-seek, and then they go back to the problem, try and squeeze out that poo a little bit more, still not coming. Then they go off and do a bit more yoga with the kids this time. Then they run back and the problem solved. I'm going to stop my poo metaphor because that was unpleasant and disturbing.
but that was the most unsettling finale to an episode of Way Blue I've seen, I think.
And so,
especially because he was flying over the kids at the time.
So at the end of the episode, the little flying yoga monkey that had the problem that day, whatever it was, it's been solved, usually in a way that involves sharing and respecting other children's feelings, and then everyone's happy and they all fly around in a really uplifting way. And it's just absolute New Age crap, isn't it?
It's propaganda. I'm surprised they get away with it on the BBC. I'm surprised the Daily Mail hasn't written a very stringent article about how we're funding for all this nonsense and New Age waffle.
No, exactly. I read once a very stern attack on CBeebies in the Daily Mail, and I think a couple of days later, Way Baloo came on, and I just turned my toes up with glee at the thought of what this programme would do to them. Because my God, it's it's by hippies.
It was CBeebies arrogant one finger up to the Daily Mail. It's like, yeah, if you don't like Balamori, have a look at this shit, baby.
At least there are no children going off to nursery or not being cared for by a two-parent family in it.
That would be awful.
That would be terrible.
I think what gets me most about Way Blue, because I never actually really watch it, obviously, because I have better things to do with my time, unlike you, it seems, is the soundtrack, which is, it goes on for like 20 minutes, and it's one song.
Yes.
And like five notes, just repeated over and over and over again, like some
awful Meridian
concept.
I think because I'm watching it, I have so many other things to be distracted and annoyed by that I've never really noticed that in particular.
Oh dear me, it's just a course of regression. And obviously, music for toddlers programmes is very simplistic, and the thing about very simplistic music is it's very easy to get it stuck in your head.
That's true.
So
yes.
I will find myself sat in a meeting the next day and suddenly realise that I'm humming the theme tune to Waverloo.
Are people looking at you in a particular way as you do this? Like, with a sort
of
mixture of
pity and
contempt.
I'm also doing yoga at the time, so.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so that's Way Blue. Crap.
Crap, but it does get
but
your kid
then,
doing
having
yoga,
said that,
which is quite cute.
Yeah, that is very cute, and, you know, they love it, so
they do.
It's very hard to really get that angry if it does seem to actually calm them down.
Exactly.
And having said that, the first time I saw it in the Night Garden, I had very, very similar feelings, and now it's kind of just like a tolerable old friend.
But in some ways, it's a very, very similar programme. You know, there's a big garden, a bunch of sort of furry creatures live in it. Or every, you know, 90% of programming for this age group is a nice big garden with a bunch of furry creatures in it who all sort of live together, have a tiny little problem, and then it's solved by the end. But in a way that's incredibly repetitive and sticks to an incredibly rigid format every single time. And that's fine because, I mean, these programmes have the feeling of being so incredibly precisely designed by child development psychologists, which is...
Or by an evil underground lair of Nazis.
I've never really noticed that much Nazi
generation
subtext to the Night Garden, I have to say.
Well, you know, repetition, following orders.
I don't think that's really what it's about. I think it's more...
They kind of goose-step around the place a bit.
In the Night Garden. Upsy-Daisy does have
little
a certain goose-steppy gait to her walk, it's true.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, the generation that's going to be running the planet in, say, 30 years' time is a generation that grew up watching In the Night Garden and Way Baloo, so I think it would be fairly easy to get Darren Brown on board, slipping a few subliminal messages and, you know.
Turn them into Nazis?
Or whatever your society utopia
I'm
is.
I'm fairly certain that's going on already. I think there's a lot of social programming going on in these things.
And exactly. The hand that programs CBeebies rules the world.
In 30 years' time. Very true. Yeah, we're all going to be doing yoga non-stop in 30 years. It's a hellish...
going around in hideously unsafe breakneck trains that go off the rails and up trees and...
Well, some would
around.
Say we're doing that now, James. No?
That's good. Bit of satire.
It didn't really work, did it?
Okay. Just for those people who don't have kids, you know, just keep them interested. British Rail, eh? There's sandwiches, eh?
there was something the other day that made me think it was an insidious bit of social programming designed to prepare us to accept the failings of broken Britain. Postman Pat and his special delivery service. And the fact that he's always late with everything and he usually fucks everything up. Because obviously he has to, because it has to be a store. If it's just Postman Pat gets a letter and takes it to the person to whom it's intended, and he does so in a timely fashion, that's not really a story. So something always goes wrong, and he's just always pissing about and doing things he shouldn't be. And
opening other people's mail and stealing their checks.
Opening people's mail, stealing their checks. Exactly. And that's designed to make you accept the failings of our postal service, I think.
Yes, and so in the Night Garden they're supposed to make us accept the failings of our Zeppelin service.
Well, as you say, it's got a train that's very unreliable and often has accidents, and that's supposed to be a fun,
and
wacky
it has
thing.
A large group of immigrant families who've moved into a ghetto and have too many children. And dress
the Pontypine
funny and speak
Quarter,
funny.
Yes.
The Pontypine and Wattinger.
Oh, are they not from...
And they don't really mix with the others that much, I've noticed.
No, that's true. They like to keep to themselves.
They kind of look at them through binoculars and stuff, but... And they have their own compartment as well. They're not allowed to travel with the rest of them.
Well...
So I think it's getting us ready for, you know, ethnic ghettoisation.
Some kind of apartheid system for Pontypines and Wattingers being introduced.
Yeah.
That is a chilling vision of
Which
the
is
future.
Which is good, because, you know, if my son came back and he was married to a Wattinger girl, I would just kick him out of the house straight away.
I'd be spectacularly confused, personally. And...
You'd have to wonder about the sex.
I would have an immediate prurient interest in what went on there, yeah. Pontypines are about, what, 1 inch high for anyone who doesn't watch this programme. That's why I was interested.
They're wee folk.
Wee folk, exactly. So that's the first, you know, that's 45 minutes down, you know, they should be softened up a bit. And then you get some sort of actor off EastEnders reading them a bedtime story. Because, let's face it, you're not going to.
Then you get the inevitable disappointment and, you know, just sheer anticlimax of, oh, it's Chris Patton. Oh, wow. Okay. And to be honest, it's not just me. Lex will, as soon as that comes on, just leave the TV. He'll just walk straight
away.
It's
not very interesting. No, Logan gives up and goes back to play with his Lego. Oh, look, it's someone... It's the guy who used to be in Hustle telling me about cows that went for a walk or something.
It's the same people over and over and over again.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's a nice service they're providing for, you know, I guess people who are too busy or lazy to read stories to their kids. I include myself in that. It's a nice thing. It's Auntie Beeb looking after all the nation's children. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, but, you know, it's destroying the free market bedtime story programmes there are out there.
And for that reason, it should be shut down immediately.
Exactly.
Quite right.
So, the bedtime hour. It does a very useful job, certainly.
It's, having to mark it out of 10 is going to be very difficult because it is... vital and invaluable and just a hugely thing I'm grateful for, but it's also fucking awful and I hate it and I have to sit and watch that shit for an entire hour every night.
As I've mentioned before, you don't have to watch it. You could just like sit there and read or something.
Read?
Just a suggestion. I'm just throwing it out
read,
there for you,
you
know.
Yeah, no, that's builder. That's a good idea. If I try and read anything, Logan comes and steals it, and the whole process is disrupted. Anyway, yes, I'm conflicted on it. What do you think? Good or bad?
Well, there's also the bitter irony of when Lex decided his bedtime was 10 o'clock, and so we'd watch the bedtime hour in the full and certain knowledge that there were another 3 hours to go until
that
bedtime.
That must have been particularly painful.
Well, I mean, even now he's going to. This is fascinating for everyone. He's going to bed at 8 o'clock. Bedtime hour finishes at 7 o'clock. So you kind of. You then need to play with him and stuff.
Oh, nightmare.
But do it in such a mellow and relaxed way that you're not going
to. They should have CBeebies plus one so you could just stick it on again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when he was staying up late, the bedtime hour was, I don't know, what, Mad Men or something?
He did get quite into Mad Men. He was watching Doctor Who with us for a bit until he started just waking up screaming all through the night.
Do you think they could have been related in any way? Or?
This is a chance. You kind of assume that nothing they see is actually going in at all.
And
but,
actually you're giving them these deep-seated fears and terrors that will stay with them throughout their life.
Yeah, it was the one with the clockwork people.
Yeah, I could see that being scary if you were two. One, in fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I would just... When we're marking it, I would say consider it a world without the bedtime hour.
Yeah.
And let that guide your number.
No, for all its horrors for me as a parent, I have to understand that I'm not really the intended audience. And for its intended audience, I think it is a spectacularly well-designed thing. Clearly a lot of thought and work has gone into it. And I'd say it does its job exceptionally well. So I'd give it 7 out of 10.
See, but then on the other hand, there's that guy Alex's face. So I'm going to give it 6 out of 10.
Yeah, fair enough. 6.5 out of 10 overall. So, for our second review tonight, we are going to be...
Can I just make a point now that I had nothing to do with the choosing of the second two topics? For...
We're going to be looking at interesting topics. What's your problem? You've just been talking about...
All I can say...
James... How interesting do you think you talking about CBeebies was for people who don't have kids and live in Britain and have free view?
All I'm saying is that anyone expecting more kind of cutting, sarcastic remarks about Eagle Piggle, you might as well just turn off now.
You really might as well just turn off now, yes. No, well, this is we wanted to look sort of widely at the whole theme of sleep, that whole area. And you can't talk about sleep, particularly as the parent of young children, without talking about sleep deprivation, the absence of sleep.
Sleep deprivation.
The prolonged and or enforced absence of sleep. Something which,
or
I guess...
I like to call it free psychedelic drugs.
Well, quite, exactly. I've got a quote here about sleep deprivation, which I think sums it up quite nicely. This is from Menachem Begin, who is the former Prime Minister of Israel and who was in an internment camp in Russia at one point in the 40s, prisoner of the KGB, I believe, or the NKVD, I think it then was. And he said of the person who has experienced sleep deprivation as a form of torture by the KGB, his spirit is wearied to death, his legs are unsteady, and he has one sole desire, to sleep. Anyone who has experienced this technique knows that not even hunger and thirst are comparable with it. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much sums up the first couple of years of being a parent for me.
So you're comparing having a kid that cries a bit and you have to get up half the time with being forced to stay awake for 48 hours straight by, like, armed guards who threaten to kill you if you fall asleep and for, like, periods of months on end.
I'm comparing it. I'm not saying it's as tough.
Okay, that's
I
all,
mean,
that's
you know,
I'm
he
saying.
What? He got kept awake. What did he have to actually do? Nothing. He just sat there. I had to get up and
right.
make a bottle
it's
of milk.
So much
I had to
worse
get up and make
you.
A bottle of milk and then listen to a kid crying and try and get him to sleep. I had to go downstairs, yeah. James. I had to go downstairs. In the
he was.
Of the
he
night.
Didn't know how lucky he was. All he had to do was just stand there in like a puddle of cold water and
wine,
cold
wine.
Siberia.
That's Menachem Begin all over. He just wouldn't shut up about it. Moo-hoo, they kept me awake for a week and threatened to kill me.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's rubbish.
It is kind of rubbish. It's obviously a problem for new parents, but it's also obviously a problem for people who actually suffer from insomnia, or it is, as you mentioned, clearly a torture technique that is used, has been used by the British government, has been used by the American government, has been used probably by most people, because it's quite a nice simple form of torture, isn't it? You don't need any extra equipment or anything, you just got to kick the guy every
time. Yeah, it doesn't leave any marks or anything.
Yeah, it's a nice easy one.
Apart from maybe slightly big bags under the eyes. Which...
We say it's unpleasant. Some of the main effects on your mental health are irritability. Have you found yourself becoming irritable?
No, shut up.
Cognitive impairment, that's a key one. You become quite stupid. Not you specifically, you know. Just people.
No, I was discussing this with the father of a very newborn recently, and we were remarking how it's ironic that your brain kind of reaches the same consistency as the first food that you attempt to give to your child.
Mush. Exactly. Impaired moral judgment. That's another one.
I noticed that.
Well, you probably wouldn't, because, you know, you're starting from a different position to the rest of us anyway.
And I'm an accountant, so immorality is... But it's probably what I've been doing quite well in my job.
Because your moral judgment's gone completely out the window.
All those pesky scruples have just flown out the window.
Severe yawning, that's not particularly interesting. That's to be expected. Hallucinations and symptoms similar to attention deficit disorder. And that's just, you know, some of the mental ones. There's all kinds of physical ones as well. But isn't that weird that, you know... I mean, it sounds like a shopping list of stuff designed to make you a terrible, terrible parent. You know what I mean? You're hallucinating. Your moral judgment's gone out the window. You're running around, you know, punching people because you're so angry. You're stupid, so you don't know what to do half the time. And you're yawning quite a lot as well.
Yeah, the yawning, that's what really pushes you over the edge.
Oh, it sets a terrible example, I think. Yeah, I just found it odd that, you know, nature would sort of design this whole system to work in such a way that it turns you into a kind of angry, stupid psychopath at the point when you
There are many things about raising children that make me realise, wonder how the human race has survived. Not least the fact that, you know, when you were a cave woman living in the cave, you know, and probably didn't have much food for yourself, and you had to give some to your kid as well.
Okay, yeah.
I'm assuming the caveman is like buggered off a long time ago.
No, they were very nurturing parents, cavemen. They took a lot of
Caveman stroke woman.
Yes.
And then, so, you know, you have this little thing, and it just makes such a racket continually. And as you say, you can't ever get some sleep, you can't ever get any time to yourself, you can't enjoy any caveman woman loving. And, you know, where's the incentive to not just kind of dump it outside in the snow?
That would be the strong love and bonding that you feel for your child.
Yeah, lucky about they got that strong love and bonding.
It really
is. If I was a kid, I would be, you know, realise once my bread was buttered, I'd be making coffee for my caveman woman parents.
Would you like some snacks, Mummy and Daddy? Would you like a cocktail? Exactly.
Complimenting their bearskin tunics.
Yeah. Thing.
You know, making them feel good about themselves. Because when they feel good about themselves, they feel good about you.
That's so true. That's a very true observation. One of the key things... But
very little to your sleep deprivation.
No, but, you know, that's all right. We're allowed to digress. Well, one of the key things that I've noticed about sleep deprivation and, you know, I've had this a couple of times, is that just everything, every single thing from, you know, doing your regular job to looking after a kid to just forming coherent thoughts, just everything feels much harder. Any given task is just feels twice as hard as it ought to be. You know you're not working at full capacity, you know what I mean? And I was interested to read that that's your brain is actually having to work twice as hard. They've done like tests on people who've been sleep deprived and people who haven't been sleep deprived, and, you know, made them sort of perform various fairly simple sort of language tasks, sort of learning phrases and what have you, and all the while they're studying their brain patterns and what activity is going on, and your brain is actually having to work a lot harder if you're sleep deprived. It's achieving much less for like much more effort, so that feeling of, oh, this is really hard work is you know, it is buzzing away there and getting nothing done. And again, this just seems to me a very inefficient way to design an organism.
So what you're saying is sleep is good.
Yeah, I guess that's what it comes down to. Yeah. Should we just...
sleep good.
Should we knock this off and go to sleep?
Oh, I love sleep. No, you know what else gets me? Is that the kids themselves, they hate sleep.
Oh, I know, that just rubs it in, doesn't it?
You put them into their cot and that's like... you're just slapping them around or something. It's the very worst thing you could do. And you're sitting there and all you want to do is just curl up under your duvet and have a nice few 40 winks. And they're under a duvet, you know. They're curled up and all they do is scream. And
you do find yourself sort of fantasising about sleep with a kind of degree of intensity, with a kind of ardour that is surprising in a way that maybe you haven't experienced before. You know, comparable to other desires you may have had. I'm not saying I get horny at the thought of a pillow, but you know, it's not far off. Let's face it.
It was one of those nice kind of downy pillows.
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
But you see, the sleep deprivation isn't really the worst part. The worst part is the waking up.
Yeah.
When you know that you have nowhere near the level of sleep you need to deal with the task that's ahead of you. And the way you try and fight it for, like, you know, so you hear the screaming and then you kind of keep your eyes shut. You know it's your turn to go. You keep your eyes shut. You can feel your wife punching you repeatedly in the stomach. And then you have to give in. Oh, are you awake? Oh, very good.
One bit of good news is that it is an effective treatment for depression. That was quite surprising to me. It does lead to psychosis and bipolar disorder, which are obviously downsides.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, it is an effective treatment in some cases for depression, which kind of makes sense.
I thought it was a symptom of depression.
Well, it's, you know, obviously there are different cases and different varieties of depression, and it's to do with, like, your body clock as well, like whether you're a sort of natural morning clock person or a night clock person. Some people who are depressed, it is an effective treatment to just deprive them of getting any decent sleep. And I thought that's a nice little upside. I'm going to focus on that. I think I've been less depressed since all this, probably just because I'm too tired to be depressed, you know.
It is quite a fag being depressed, you know, all that.
It takes effort and I just can't be Bart
Fallout Boy.
I can't
or
speak either, which is a problem.
A lot easier to just sit down in front of CBeebies.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, sleep deprivation, we agree that it's a bad thing.
Yeah. 1 out of 10, there you go.
I don't know, because at least it stops you being depressed. And I haven't got bipolar disorder yet. I'm going to say 3 out of 10, because okay. I like to look on the bright side. So that's an average of 2 out of 10 for sleep deprivation.
I give your mama 5 out of 10.
Okay, for our final review tonight, we are going to be looking at the phenomenon of unihemispheric sleep.
Unihemispheric sleep, you say? What's that?
I do say, yes. Unihemispheric sleep is the phenomenon whereby some animals are capable of sleeping with one half of their brain at a time.
Like fish or something?
Like fish or something. Well, it's in dolphins and sort of sea mammals it's been observed. Because obviously you have to scan brain to sort of see what's going on and see what activity there is. And I guess, I don't know if that's possible to do with a fish, because I guess there's not that much activity at the best of times. But yeah, certainly dolphins and sea lions and that sort of thing. And also in birds it's been observed. And this is kind of makes sense when you think about it. And what you see with dolphins is that they're, you know, how are you going to get any sleep if you're a dolphin? Because you're an air-breathing mammal and you're underwater. So how are you supposed to sleep?
You'd sink. I never thought about that.
Yeah, see, it's interesting. You'd sink to the bottom and
you'd
drown.
Go that far.
Give it a chance. You'd sink to the bottom and you'd drown. So what they do is they sleep with one half of their brain at a time, as I've mentioned, and they sort of float up to the top and sort of take a breath, roll over, go back down for a few minutes and keep doing that. So it only takes half of their brain to do that, obviously, and they're not at full alertness, you know, they're not battle ready for whatever dolphin battles they may be fighting.
Dolphin war! Oh.
War with the walruses, I don't know. But they are, you know, technically awake and, you know, able to think and able to, I believe, able to sort of decide to sort of turned one half of the brain on or off, or sort of able to decide to go into this state. And
so
to come
do they, like,
it.
Alternate then?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I guess so, yeah. I mean, you can't sleep on one side all night, you'll get bed sores, even if you're in the sea. That's just common sense.
Just as a suggestion, wouldn't it be easier if they're air-breathing mammals to not live in the fucking sea?
That's such a good point. Why don't they just grow some fucking legs and get on with it?
You know, we all have to deal with the Earth. Why can't they just swanning around in their little underwater kingdoms with magical mermaids and singing crabs? What makes them so special?
Yeah, good point. Well, I guess they've chosen a different evolutionary path, and, you know, can we judge them?
Yes! Dolphins are fucking cunts! I give dolphins 0 out of 10.
Wow! Harsh words for the dolphins there from James.
It's just a sleep deprivation talking.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sorry, dolphins. Sorry to all our dolphin listeners.
I apologise for James's impaired moral judgment and irritability. But yeah, birds can do this as well. And birds can actually fly and sort of swim. And you can see this if you see like a line of ducks floating along, swimming along on the top of a pond. What they can do is, or if they're sat there, the ducks on the end of the line will have one eye open on each side. And the ducks in the middle of the line, they're just proper asleep. They can sleep both half their brain at the same time. But the ones on the end are actually sleeping with one eye open and keeping an eye on any trouble. And then if anything kicks off, they, you know, can wake up properly and alert all the other ducks.
And then they can just fly around and get shot out of the sky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do when they wake up. They're fucking ducks, you know. I could take a duck.
You can take a duck.
I could so take a duck.
A duck would spank you sideways.
What's a duck going to do to me?
Well, first of all, you'd probably back down as soon as he started quacking. I know what you're like.
Yeah, I probably would, actually. I'd panic and get a bit nervous and just apologise a lot and then leave. Which I have been known to do by canals when it's all kicked off. Geese,
when, you know,
certainly.
When a duck is looking at your bird and... Oh, bird, that was quite a good pun. Yeah.
That was an hilarious pun. Well done, James. I've certainly backed away from fights with geese, but I reckon I could take a duck.
Okay, well, maybe for the next podcast.
What?
Live duck fight.
Live duck fight, yeah, okay. It'll liven things up a bit, certainly. Yeah, but see, what I was thinking was, why can't we do this? Why can't we sleep half our brain at one time? And there is a sensible explanation for why we can't, because, you know, our evolutionary ancestors crawled into burrows at one point and sort of stopped having to worry about drowning because we were underwater or being eaten by a fox because we were sat on a pond. And so we could just actually relax and turn off our entire brain and get some proper sleep.
Fox.
And over time we lost the ability to do this. But I think it's quite a neat trick and I'd like to get it back. Because it would, don't you think that would be handy, being able to sleep half your brain at one time?
Well, but you see, you're an artist, so you wouldn't ever be able to turn off your creative left side brain.
No, but that's the best part. I could turn off the creative left side part. You know, all day long, I'm snoozing away with my right brain, and I'm drawing lots of amazing, wildly creative pictures. Then it gets to, you know, 9 o'clock at night, and I switch off my creative brain, because it's had a hard day, it's drawn lots of amazing pictures, and then I, you know, do me taxes and catch up on the tidying and all the things that actually I don't ever do because my right brain is
useless.
Maybe my right brain just is asleep.
Maybe you should just try tapping that side of your head, see if you can wake it up.
Shit, maybe that would explain a lot.
Dropped off in a chemistry lesson like 15 years ago and just
are you in there logical, rational Neil. Just tap once if you're awake. I thought that would be a handy thing. A handy ability, a little sort of superpower that we could get back.
Well, was it Leonardo da Vinci? I think I might have heard this in Seinfeld, that he slept for 10 minutes every hour, but never had a proper sleep beyond that. So he'd go 24 hours a day.
If you vaguely think you heard that on Seinfeld, then I think that must be accurate, yes.
Well, I think that might be worth a go.
Just having little sleeps all around the clock, but never a proper sleep.
Yeah, although it would make it impossible to watch an hour-long drama.
You'd never know how Lost ended.
Well, Lost would be all right, because that's got the breaks.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, if it's a BBC drama, if it's Being Human, then, you know, you'd always miss the shocking climax.
That's a terrifying prospect, which I'd probably be more worried by if I'd ever seen or know what you're talking about.
Okay. You should watch Being Human instead.
Do you want to review that?
Yeah, it's about a vampire and a werewolf and a ghost who live together and have crazy.
Yeah, but
emotions.
Out of 10.
I'm only halfway through it, but I'll give it 7 so far.
Okay, that's pretty good. Well, yeah, anyway, so I was thinking I want this back, and I was interested to know whether it was possible to get it back, because mammals can't do this. All, like, land-living mammals have lost this ability, which seems unfair, because we're the top of the food chain, so we ought to have all the tricks, you know? So why can a fucking duck do something I can't do?
What, like,
ridiculous.
Fly?
Shut up. You're so pro-duck tonight, James. I don't know what's got into you.
Well, you know, when the big duck-dolphin war kicks off, I know which side I'm going to be on.
But anyway, they have done experiments on cats where they have severed the connection down the middle of the brain. Severed the connection between the left and right halves of a cat's brain. Cut it right through the brainstem. Isn't that awesome? I mean,
sad.
Terrible. But yeah, once they've done that, in these experiments, the two hemispheres can sleep independently of each other. So it's possible.
So maybe after the live duck fight next podcast, we can have some live brain surgery and I will chop your brain in half and see if you can fall asleep.
That might be a bit difficult, but if there's a live duck fight going on, I might be able to do it anyway. Because the only people who claim that they actually have this ability or can do this are soldiers. During extreme stress combat situations, they claim that they are able to sleep but have one eye open, keeping an eye on things. It's been claimed, but obviously it can't be replicated in an environment, you know, in a laboratory situation, because pussy scientists are not prepared to start a war with people and force them into extreme combat situations just to prove a point about brain science.
Modern science just lets us down once again.
It's really lost my respect there. So yeah, if we've got some ducks fighting dolphins and all that kind of excitement going on, and I'm a pitched combatant, I'll try nodding off with half my brain and see how that goes for me.
Okay, so, well, that's good. That's next week's podcast sorted anyway. Have you said all you need to say about this subject?
I think we've covered it. I think it's a fascinating area and an awesome superpower that I want, so I'm going to give it 8 out of 10.
I'm really not that interested at all. So
I'm kind of sensing that, actually.
Sorry, I thought
it's
I was
like
coming
you're
up.
Not interested in amazing stuff.
I think, to be honest, I think half my brain is asleep while I'm doing this podcast, so...
Yeah, that might explain a lot.
But yeah, so that's 5 out of 10?
Okay.
5.5 out of 10.
5.5 out of 10. Okay, well, that's been a nice discussion about sleep for us, and it's achieved, you know, I think we're both almost there, and hopefully anyone listening to this should be safely off having some nice quality deep REM sleep right now.
And just in case you're not, Neil's going to now sing you a lullaby.
No. I'm not going to do that.
Oh.
I don't know any. Do you sing lullabies?
No,
because we're terrible parents and that's what we have television for.
No, that's what we have Bernard Cribbins doing Winnie the Pooh for. Or us doing podcasts. So in a way you do sing a lullaby every night to your child.
A boring, expletive-filled lullaby.
Best kind.
Alright, well that wraps up another exciting episode of Unified Review Theory. What do I have to say?
remember
cognitive
you can...
judgment's gone again.
Oh no. You can contact us through Twitter or our website or through iTunes, I guess, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reviews and stuff. And remember, we still need your suggestions for reviews, so have we had any yet, Neil?
No.
No? So we want lots, because next podcast is going to be a total request live phantasma. So whatever you suggest, we're going to talk about.
No, I don't think that's a wise thing to say.
It's a great idea.
No, I don't think it's a great idea.
Well, we'll see.
we'll pick some ideas. We're not going to review anything that anyone suggests, because you don't know what people are going to say. You don't know where their minds are going to go.
For very long, you know.
Okay, James is going to review whatever you suggest.
Fine.
Whatever you want James to do and then review, you can tell him, and he will. I think that sounds fun. So, yeah, send your suggestions for what James should do to us via Twitter or as comments on the blog.
I sense one of us is more committed to this project than the other one.
No, absolutely. I think this is going to be an interesting experiment, and I look forward to hearing... I look forward to seeing what people suggest, or what I, using a variety of internet pseudonyms, suggest that you should do to yourself for next week.
I notice you go straight away to, like, debasement and humiliation, whereas I was thinking, yeah, it was just like people might be interested in our opinions on things.
No, that's true. I should have not gone there, maybe. If there's any particular film that you really love and hold dear to your heart, or a film that you particularly hate and want us to have to endure, or, you know, any experience, any piece of music, we'll review anything, you know. I think we've proved that by this point.
Well, and we must review everything.
We're
going to have to do it all sooner or later.
It's really just a question of prioritising, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, please send us in your suggestions. I'll sort of put the word out on Twitter before we do the next one and get a few suggestions in.
Excellent.
Twitter at URTheory. That's URTHEORY.
You can still spell.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Okay, and on that note, I think we're going to turn in for the night.
Yay.
Sweet dreams, listeners. Goodbye.
Ah!
Fuck!
And I love hip-hop like Madonna loves it.
9 out of 10.